That's Band of Horses and compliments here on Six Music. Altor, we'll be talking lengthily, if that's a word, after the news. But I want to say hello to Stuart. Stuart Lees. Hello, Stuart.
Hello. Thanks for having me on.
You're more than welcome. You're more than welcome. Now, all comics like The Simpsons, don't they?
Yeah, although I'm not one of these people. I haven't watched every single one.
No,
you know? I mean, I watch it when it's on. But I mean, I think it's one of those things that is incredibly influential, but not everyone's aware of that. You look back at Father Ted and all the cutaways to Things Out of the Window, and the pacing of it is so Simpsons. It's great.
Really? Yeah, yeah, I hadn't thought about that. Yeah. So, do you have a favourite character?
Well, I quite like the comic book guy, actually.
Yes.
You mentioned, I think he's a really well-observed little guy, the sort of person you don't always see being done. They've got it down really well, that. As a comics nerd, I think he's spot on.
It's the sort of thing, comic book guy, that you don't know the thing exists almost until someone satirizing. Yeah, there are those kind of people.
That's a great thing about comedy, when someone does that and it becomes sort of truism. I get my kid the Simpsons comics and the comic book adventures of Comic Book Guy.
Oh, really?
Are really great, because of course they can be incredibly self-referential, so it's brilliant, which I like, obviously.
I'll talk more to Stuart about tour and forthcoming projects after the news. To take us there, this is Miracle Fortress. I've forgotten there was fake applause. I hate, one of the things I hate most on records, it's a nice record, but one of the things I hate most on records is fake applause.
Yeah, that was used as intro music by a particular comedy club in London for about 10 years.
Was it?
Always go on, every act would go on to that. It gives me the shakes.
It really?
Yeah.
I used to do a live show on 5 Live that had Fat Boy Slim, one of his, and I can't hear, if I hear it in like a clothes shop or in a pub, I suddenly go to
did you ever
clench.
Write for the Radio 4 satirical programme Weekending?
No, I didn't.
Because
no.
That used a snippet of Party Fears 2 by The Associates, which is a fantastic record. Mm. But and I would love to be able to listen to it now without suddenly expecting someone to go, appearing in this week's Weekending. Well, and I count down all the credits, ruined forever by association.
It's like when you albums that you absolutely loved as a kid, that feeling when you hear one on the radio.
Yeah.
You hear the next track.
Yeah,
come
you
on,
hear the next track. Well, you know, we do it at our age. The young kids don't.
Yeah,
they listen to everything out of order. They do what they want.
No, they're just dead.
Downloading things
legally and illegally, I hear.
Yeah.
Carpet Remnant World.
Yeah.
Is that a real place? I mean, is it a mental space that one inhabits?
Well, there was a place called Carpet Remnant World, there was a whole chain of them, but luckily they've closed now, so I'm not in any. And the last one was in Sunderland.
Right.
And basically, it was. I was trying to think what this show's about. Mm. It's about sort of a kind of collapsing, morally bankrupt society. So I kind of thought a world of like remnants.
Yeah.
It's about the fact that because I spend all my time driving around and looking after children, the show's kind of quite disparate. It's not as thematically unified as usual. So therefore, it's a bit of a rag bag of remnants. And it's also about the fact that because I spend a lot of time on the road, I end up like looking at places like Carpet Remnant Road outside of motorways. And luckily, all those things kind of sort of came together. And it's also good, you can make a set out of carpets, I'm getting more people. I spent a bit of money on some carpets for a set, a bit like Emerson, Lake and Palmer used to have a carpet, didn't they?
They did.
So I'm the Emerson, Lake and Palmer of stand-up now.
Someone told me, the stories abound from old roadies about Emerson, Lake and Palmer, which is have you heard the ones about, what are the three things you don't want on tour? Earache, backache, and Greg Lake. Not earache, toothache, and Greg Lake, because he was to keep it difficult, apparently.
Right.
And like someone told me it was just because Keith Emerson had all those keyboards.
Yeah.
Carl Palmer had that massive drum kit.
Yeah, which was too heavy to go in any vehicle.
That's right.
It was made of like gold or something.
It was made of obsidian. Would you want this obsidian drum kit? It's like the 20 men employed to carry it.
I think it was.
That's right. And the audience had to come to his house.
See
me play my obsidian kitty would bellow. Yeah. apparently Greg Lake said, I've got a guitar. So he said, I'm going to have a really posh carpet so that I've got a valuable and impractical thing to be transported.
So he was in competition with the bulk and size of the other people's equipment.
I think so.
Right.
Exactly. Although I've had Greg Lake on the Freak Zone and he was a charming man. So, I mean, people. But I think they had some fractious days. But how have we got onto Emerson, Lake and Palmer?
Well, we're talking about carpets, weirdly, as the usual. And I noticed that the next next record is Magic Carpet Ride by Bill Scott. And I didn't even know that was happening. It's just an accident.
But didn't you pick Magic Carpet Ride?
No, I don't think so. No, I chose Archangel's Thunderbird.
I know you chose Archangel. Ian is telling me that you did choose.
No, a new Fall album I did. I don't know where that's come from. Magic Carpet Ride.
Well, you know what? We'll play. In a minute. Yeah. We'll play Archangel Thunderbird next, right. Because it's a great record. And in the show, I mean, is it analytical about yourself or about the outside world?
Well, since the problem with going on the television is a lot of the things that I sort of think I do, like tear my own act to bits as I'm doing it, leave long spaces and talk slowly. I've noticed a lot of young people copying them now.
I'm
trying to do it a bit less. So it's not as sort of self-referential as it was, but it's sort of about the act of trying to write a show. When you're younger, you're out and about and you have adventures and you get ideas from that. Whereas now I mainly drive around places like that big, where you are in Salford with this show, which is kind of the kind of place venues are now, in these sort of featureless spaces by Docklands or Riversides, or I look after kids, and it's sort of about how does that affect your worldview, you know? But I didn't want to turn into one of those comics that does stuff about how their kid said a funny thing.
Which, in fact, I've noticed that when you said those comics, that's like every comic at the moment.
I mean,
I think
you know, you should kill yourself if you're doing that, really. but the problem is, that's mainly what I do, is have children and go, oh, look, he's said a funny thing. So it's trying to sort of do that with a kind of distance from it, you know. Yeah. But I've done about a week of it now. It's going pretty well. I mean, sort of last week I thought, oh, I'm not sure if this will work. Still terrifying after 20 odd years. And then it kind of came together. So, yeah.
Does the fear never recede?
I'm not frightened of being on stage. Yeah. To me, being on stage is like a safe space. Anything that's ever going to happen to me on stage has happened. I've been attacked. I've had stuff thrown at me. People tried to beat me up afterwards. I've gone to silence to hundreds of people. I'm past caring. But what is frightening is thinking, can you assemble the show? Where will the idea come from? And there's stuff that only happened last week in this at the last minute that's fixed it. And it's every time you think, I can't do it again. And I've written about, in the last decade, I've written 13 hours of stuff. Most people have 20 minutes that they trail around for episodes. exhausting.
Well, that's interesting. I can't do it again. I mean, it sounds morally and physically exhausting.
Yeah, it is a bit. I mean, it's sort of also, you know. Also, it's interesting having done the telly, because kind of you, and on the one hand, people have seen you on telly, so they kind of want to see a version of that. But on the other hand, you've kind of done it, so you want to move on. Like, it's kind of trying to work out how to pitch that. Like these bands where do they play all the hits? You know, do you sort of do the sort of things they want, or do you play none of them? I mean, I like The Fall. I like going and being insulted by them not doing anything I've ever heard and being made to feel grateful for that. Yeah. You know, and I sort of think, you know, there should be a part of that in performance. It should be on your terms in a way.
I think it's funny. I think bands, what I've found with bands is they go through that phase of, we're not going to play any of the hits. We're going to play on your album in its entirety. And then they come out the other end of that and they get to an age and they go, we're just going to do all the hits now.
They'll do Echo and the Bunnymen perform Ocean Rain with the London Philharmonic Orchestra for 70 quid at the at a big theatre, you know. And obviously, you know, at my age, I'm happy to go to that.
Sometimes bands say things like, I'm talking about comics now and wondering, they say, it's just nice to get reaction. We'd rather get people throwing things at us than just sitting there. And I think, no, you wouldn't. Is that true though? Would you rather have someone throw things at you?
I used to feel like that. But now, I used to like playing to people that didn't really get me, and I thought it was fun.
Really?
But I'm 43 now, and I've got dependents, and I don't want people that don't like me to come. Actually, I'd rather let the people that do like me know that they're going to come and see something where for 2 hours nothing insultingly banal would be said, and then go. And I often put bad reviews on posters and stuff to try to stop the wrong people coming, so they don't have a miserable time. Because also, I don't want to take their money off them. You know, if you're middle aged and you've got to get a babysitter and you come out and see me, and you don't like me, there's no redeeming features. You can't go, oh well, I liked some of it. You just hate it. You know, rather they didn't come. I don't want to waste their time. You know, I'm supposed to be promoting this.
You are promoting it very well. Well, while we're promoting it, let's say that Jan Moir of the Daily Mail said it was a deeply unpleasant slime pit of bitterness.
I know. Yeah, well, it's a good pull. But then on the other hand, most reasonable people will go, Yeah, but it was Jan White. It's bound to be. Well, exactly. Probably all right.
Is it the Arabs who say, my enemy's enemy is my friend? So, you can count that as a recommendation.
You can
it?
Sort of, it's a way of keeping people out in a way. There was a guy that came to see me in Edinburgh afterwards, and I was wondering if this would work. And he was an old guy, like 70 odd, and he said, I'd never heard of you before, but I saw you'd put an incredibly unfavourable quote on your poster from Toby Young. And actually, it's a great way of getting nice people in, you know, to
that
like go.
That is a great way of getting people in. That would work for me. I hated it, Toby Young would have me queuing up.
But, you know, it's sort of, in a way, it's sort of marketing. You know,
that's great. Yeah, so Toby Young and Jan Moyer hate it. What better recommendation could you need? We'll have a tune because you were very, as you mentioned, The Fall. I know you're a huge Fall fan, but you were very you're very discerning in your musical taste. Do you still keep up? I don't mean keep up. That sounds like I'm making it up. It's like a chore.
Well, keep up's weird. I mean, I'm lucky in that for 15 years I've been able to reviewed two albums a week for a Sunday newspaper, and so I do get. Same stuff, things, yeah. So I kind of do. But, I increasingly I like all kinds of different things.
Yeah.
It's interesting with the shows, actually. I mean, I think it was, I forget which actress it was. It might have been Betty Davis who said that she can only get the character when she's decided what shoes they wear.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And with putting the shows together, it's sort of, when I realise what the intro music is and what should be playing in the room before I go on, then I kind of know what the feel of it is. And with this one, because I was thinking about societies and the collapse of society and kind of those neutral architectural spaces and utopias and things, I realised about 10 days ago it was krautrock, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Sort of Kraftwerk, Cannes, Neu, early 70s, kind of that, all that sort of stuff about the dream of a possible future, but it's kind of a slightly critical relationship with it. And when I have the 20 minute version of Autobahn on before I go on, I feel like the mood's set.
The mood is informed.
It's really weird. And so that's why I've chosen Archangel's Thunderbird by Armand Dore, because I thought it's that's what I'm coming on to now.
Is
the heaviest rock song ever written.
Fantastic. Yeah. Oh man, that's great, isn't it? It's just so
hilarious,
nuts,
isn't it?
It's just nuts, isn't it? It's just the idea of him just playing and just thinking, come on, let's just do
I mean, what I was thinking about was sort of, you know, when I started doing comedy in the 1980s, you just used to come on, you'd get introduced and you'd come on.
Yeah.
And then at some point between then and now, you kind of have their intro music. You know, I really noticed in the States in the 90s, if you were at the Montreal Comedy Festival, you know, there'd be a band, what do you want to come on to? What do you mean? And they'd like know 1,000 tunes, and they go. And the first person I ever saw do it was Bill Hicks coming on to. He came on to some sort of thing that sounded like Jimi Hendrix, and he was in like a cowboy hat, and there was all fire. And,
yeah,
and it was sort of 1993.
And he used to come on to Tomorrow Never Knows by the Beatles.
Yeah, he's going, what's this? You know, you've never seen anything like it.
Yeah, amazing.
You come on, when you put it, ladies and gentlemen, and then you come on.
Yeah, yeah.
And now he's, what is it?
Yeah.
And then, but now it's sort of become a default setting that comedians come on to exciting rock music. At least with Bill Hicks, he was sort of excited. He was sort of rock and roll.
Yeah,
he was
a rock and roll comic.
And now you kind of look at something like Jason Manford on you know, Comedy Rocks, and it's all like this band, and he comes out and he's like, oh, my shopping trolley doesn't work or something. And it's sort of, they've sort of forgotten that there should be some relationship between
music.
So for the intro, I was sort of thinking, what fits with this krautrock theme that is the most.
Yeah,
just insanely heavy thing. It creates such an atmosphere of portentous doom. It's kind of impossible. to follow.
And I'm just going to quickly tell a story that got that out of Wigan Library. Yeti by Amon Dore. Took it home. Loved that track when I was. This is when I was about 15. Taped it illegally, if I'm guessing. But because what I really loved about it was the second side was completely different. This kind of mellow American country rock with a tune that went, "I wanna go where my country girl goes." Cutting out to 10 years later, I'm singing this song to myself, and someone goes, "Oh, you're a Brinsley Schwartz fan, are you?" I went, "No, mate, I'm on Dull." And he went, "Country girl." I said, "It's Amon Dull." He said, "Is it hell?" And they mispressed it. And for 10 years, I'd thought that this.
Yeah. But you know, it's sort of, it's not impossible that Amon Dull 2 might have done that.
Actually.
If you start an album with Archangel's Thunderbird, you might end it with some country tunes. But yeah, no, or that means also, presumably somewhere, there's someone and the site. Two of his Brinsley Schwartz album is all those 17-minute Armand Dull tracks, things like "The Rainmaker has destroyed his egg" or something like that. And he's going,
I never thought of that. I never thought. I've been reading in the Word magazine about Brinsley Schwartz. Well, I thought they were bloody terrible.
Yeah.
I thought it was noisy and meaningless. Oh, well, that's very good, yeah. Is everything grist, you know, to your comedic mill, as it were? Are you always thinking, yeah, I could make a joke out of that?
Well, you know, I 20 years ago, I used to walk around with a little notebook and write everything down. But now I tend to be trying to think. I tend to try and think now, what's the show about? You know, and sort of reverse engineer it from that. And because the little jokes, I can sort of come up with them now. I'm trying to think what are the big. Yeah. I mean, the show before last, which was called If You Prefer a Milder Comedian, Please Ask for One. It was 3 half-hour routines, basically. That's right. All it was. And right. So I wasn't really looking for little bits. It's sort of different now. I kind of think of it as these huge lumps of stuff, you know. And I mean, if you look at all the people that hate me on the internet, that's what they don't like, that it just goes on too long and there's no jokes. But I'm trying to do that. Does that make it better? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Well, that's true. Does it make it better? I don't discuss.
Yeah.
I was talking about Kate Bush the other day with someone, and I said that I wondered if the reverence in which she was held might sometimes be a bit stultifying for her. And are you getting to the stage of being revered, do you think?
Well,
amongst a certain group of people, you are, aren't you?
To a certain group of people, yeah. I mean, I get called the comedian's comedian.
And you do.
But I'd see a lot of comedy, and I know there are hundreds of people better than me. I think it's sort of, the sort of people that don't know much about. If you only see people on telly, I can see why you might think that.
Yeah.
But if you'd ever seen Jerry Sadovitz or Daniel Kitson or Gavin McAleer or, you know, the proper people, then you'd kind of know. I mean, the reverence that you sometimes get held in and the positive reviews that you get is counterbalanced by the fact that I have a 40,000-word document that took me about 2 weeks to compile of people on the internet saying they hope that I die of Crohn's disease and things like that.
Right,
okay. So it's sort of, you know, it's nice that, and also, even when there's a perception of you as a success, you still can't necessarily get anything commissioned or made or, you know, what broadcasting's like. It's sort of,
I do, yeah.
So it's kind of, luckily for me, because my act relies on me, on the perception of me as an outsider figure and of me complaining about things, nothing ever goes quite well enough for that to be
subverted.
There's always something.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But I mean it is I am aware that it does change things. I mean, I used to have a lot of fun doing jokes about other comics or making fun about things, and it doesn't quite work in the same way if you've got a 4-month sellout run in a theatre.
No.
You know, because you're a status figure.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You're not, you know, and I think this is when we have all these discussions about taste and in comedy and who you can pick on and whatever, it's not the material that's the problem. The problem is who's saying it, right? And you know, and Sadovitz, I mean, he would hate me to say this because he doesn't like anyone being nice about it. But Sadovitz can say anything because he's the character he's created by being that person.
I was going to say
is at the bottom of the pile. Whereas if you're a successful multimillionaire like Ricky Gervais or Frankie Boyle, it's not their fault.
Mm.
But it does change the perception of how stuff lands. And that's, you know, that's an interesting problem. Not a problem comics used to have, because we didn't earn that money.
Not a problem comics used to have. Yeah. That's interesting about persona. I was thinking about you the other day, because I got asked, as I do quite a lot, and I'll say no these days, thanks to people like you, to do one of those programmes about, you know, And it was, and I just thought, you know what? I haven't done one for about 10 years, thanks to people like Stuart Lee, who used to take the what out of me for doing them. And I thought,
said you were an omniscient god.
You did. It was able fairly to see it was a fairly gentle.
Look, if I thought you'd be upset, I wouldn't have come
No, of
on
course.
Here today.
Of course not. But I did think, they've got a point. But then someone said about that. I noticed a tweet about it saying, have you seen Stuart? And I said, yeah, of course I've seen that thing Stuart said about you. Stuart said about Stuart. This got very confusing. I'll play a record that shows this confusion later on. And they said, but you're smart enough to know that's a character that he inhabits. And I thought, I'm not sure it is, and it's perfectly fine if it's not a character he inhabits.
Well, it sort of is up to a point. I mean, that's the weird thing. It's not as pronounced as it is when people go out and it's like Al Murray's the pub landlord, you know.
Sure, yeah.
But to some extent, when I have to do months and months of me, I sort of hate me by the end.
Do you?
I hate it's a kind of sort of, it's an exaggeration of things, you know. He's more keen to show that he's erudite than I am in a personal level.
Yeah.
And he's also more embittered about things, and he's more pedantic than I am. But they're all parts of me, but they're exaggerated, you know. And you know, so it's sort of, it basically, a lot of things you don't like about yourself blown up a bit. You know?
It's Jonathan Ross used to say it's a show, but it's an exaggerated sort of version of himself. And funny enough, and I think you're absolutely right. I think while I was doing the very thing I decided to do for one first time in years, as I was doing it, I thought, this isn't quite me.
It was that as well,
This is a sort of a version of me I think you want, which is weird, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, at least an actor knows that they're that they're in character presenting something. But yeah. I do know that I must be in character up to a point, because I do find myself having a sort of schizophrenic episodes where I think, oh, that's the kind of thing he would think.
Yeah.
Who?
Ooh. Yeah.
Him, you, when you're on stage, that's what you would think on stage, that's what you would say on stage. So I'm kind of aware that I'm sort of writing slightly for this character, but he shares my name, opinions, personal history.
Outlook on
and,
that.
And I live in the same house as him.
Yeah, that's you know, interesting.
But yeah.
But he's, yeah. So let's do the more traditional plugging thing now instead of... So Carpet Remnant World is in London for a long time,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, Carpet Remnant World is at the Leicester Square Theatre in London until February, and then I'm going everywhere that anyone will have me, that is cost-effective to do so. So
right,
if that's not where you live, I'm really sorry. I've tried, and I do every year try to go as many places as I can.
Which they can find out there, he said dismissively.
Yeah, yeah.
Which people can one can find out about by...
I'm basically touring it till about October. Yeah.
Stuart Lee, EW, Stuart Lee,
yeah.
.co.uk
yeah.
will for all your Stuart Lee needs. And what any other major projects looming we should know of?
I don't know. I mean, I haven't done anything like it for about 6 or 7 years, but I might do another theatre thing and give a stand-up. I might lay it down for a bit. Or I don't know if the BBC will want to do a third series. It's been a year. No one's contacted me. But I don't know. If they wanted to do that, that might take us some time. But I don't know. I mean, everything's gone better than I could ever have hoped for, so I probably need to go and do something that goes really badly to get some ideas.
Right. That's fair enough. That's very candid of you. Stuart, lovely to see you, as always.
Thanks a lot. Six Music. BBC Radio. Six Music.